review of a Winnipeg-based website that's filling a void in end-of-life care in Canada.
If I was a nurse and I said, I've exhausted all the options for pain that I have, and it's still not under control, I could consult an expert. They would be able to give me that advice. They would be able to guide me through that process. That's where technology can be helpful. But technology can never replace human contact.
On the feature interview today, Derek Meadham from the Institute of Marriage and Families Canada on a website called virtualhospice.ca. In the news, an update on a parliamentary vote on conscience rights, countering some of the statistical spin on doctor-assisted suicide, and a look at a Christian worldview conference in the States last week.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
You may recall that earlier this month, we spoke with Manitoba MP Ed Komarnicki about his private member's motion on so-called conscience rights for MPs, the notion that MPs should have the right to vote their conscience on controversial issues. Well, the motion came to a vote in Parliament last week, and it passed overwhelmingly by a vote of 273-1.
It's good to see that an overwhelming majority of MPs see this as important, that they're able to vote their own way when it comes to issues of conscience. It's super important for us, especially working in the pro-life field here, where our job is to work not only with Canadians, but with elected representatives to advance pre-born human rights or to advance human rights for all human beings. And so we need to have Parliament open to the idea of discussing these serious matters.
That's Mike Schutten from We Need a Law. He says the vote is encouraging. And guess who voted for the bill? Justin Trudeau. Yes, the same Justin Trudeau who had earlier decreed that he wouldn't sign off on the candidacies of any would-be Liberal MPs who aren't firmly on the pro-choice side of the abortion question.
We're hoping that this indicates sort of a move away from that harsh edict he made just over a year ago, where he said he would force all members of his party to vote against any type of regulation on abortion. So we're excited about that prospect, but also that MPs from all the parties who recognize that, look, we want to live in a country that is not governed by party whips, but is governed by people who the average Canadian have elected to go to Ottawa to represent their views with the hopes that they would be able to express those views when the time came, especially when it comes to matters of conscience like the life issue.
So who was the one MP who voted against the motion? Ottawa area Conservative and government whip Gordon O'Connor. One of the things we like to do here at Lighthouse News is give you some context on stories. And today, that context is on the question of public opinion surrounding doctor-assisted suicide. You may have seen the stories in the media about a survey done by a group called Dying with Dignity, a poll that purports to show more than 80% of Canadians support euthanasia in one form or another. Natalie Hudson-Sonnen from Life Canada has certainly seen the numbers.
It's a very extensive poll in terms of who it's asked, you know, looking at women, looking at men, looking at the disabled, people in the medical profession. So they've asked questions of all these different segments of society, but they've asked a very simple question in terms of, do you agree with physician-assisted suicide or do you not? And usually when the question gets asked in those terms, you do get high percentages of people saying, yes, they agree with it. And our polling shows the same kind of data. So that's not inconsistent.
But is that 84% support level really accurate? Natalie says her group did a survey in Quebec a few years back, just before that province legalized euthanasia, and the support tends to fall off when the questions move beyond generalities and get into more specifics.
74% supported medical aid in dying. But then we asked, well, do you actually know what medical aid in dying is? Only 31% correctly knew what the phrase was. 27% thought it was some sort of palliative care. Then we asked, you know, are you concerned that a significant number of sick, elderly, or disabled persons might eventually be killed without their consent? Overall, 82% said yes, they were concerned. 83% concerned that people with mental illness may eventually seek to be killed rather than obtaining the help they need. 84% concerned that some elderly in abusive situations may eventually be pressured to accept medical aid in dying. And then at the end of the survey, we polled them again, and said, okay, so now how strongly do you support euthanasia? And 47% said it required further study, and only 35% still said, no, we should go ahead and legalize it.
There were a lot of numbers in that last clip. What you need to remember is that before they were asked questions about the possible problems with doctor-assisted suicide, support was at 74%. Once they thought about it, the support level went down to 35%. One other thing from that survey, a majority of respondents said the government should devote resources to palliative care rather than facilitating doctor-assisted suicide. And one thing more today, ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten spent last week down in Michigan at a conference sponsored by the Acton Institute.
Acton Institute is a Christian think tank based in Grand Rapids, been around for 25 years or so, and they exist for the study of religion and liberty. That's their tagline. So once a year for a full week, they run Acton University, which is a intensive worldview training seminar or series of seminars in which they cover liberty, religious freedom, economics, and a bunch of other issues, all from a robustly Judeo-Christian worldview.
Andre wasn't there to make any presentations. He was there to learn. And he says they won't even let you sit in on the general sessions till you get some basics right.
There's four prerequisite courses. We start with a proper understanding of who is man. So the foundational course is called Christian Anthropology. You know, who is man? We're made in the image of God. So we have this respect and love for humankind. But we also recognize that we're fallen, that we're sinners and so on. So that proper understanding of who we are will shape how we see other things. So the second session is on Christian vision of government, and how you understand government is massively influenced by proper understanding of man. The third session is on economic way of thinking, and the fourth one is biblical foundations of freedom. So all of that's taught from a robustly Christian worldview perspective.
So how does this tie into Andre's work with ARPA? He says learning is never wasted, especially this kind of learning.
To really, really help us understand the biblical foundations to issues like freedom, like liberty, like economics, environmentalism even they deal with. And when we understand that ourselves, like we as ARPA staff, then we can turn around and take that and bring it to the ARPA grassroots. That's definitely what I'm gleaning here. Some stuff is not totally new, but what is very valuable is just helping me to understand how much God's design for society, God's design for government, for the family, how good it is for society, and how good it is when we as people recognize his design and then apply those principles to our common life together.
Back with more after this.
ARPA Canada is launching its 2015 Billboard contest. After a successful contest in 2013, we are once again calling for submissions. This year, there are two categories. The first is abortion, and the second is open to all other submissions. The winner of the abortion category will receive an 8-inch Samsung Galaxy tablet, and the winner of the free topic category will receive a 10-inch Samsung Galaxy tablet. More details are available at arpacanada.ca/contest2015. Submissions will be received until October 23rd. We look forward to seeing your designs.
And we're back on the program. Special guest for the feature interview today is Derek Miedema. He's a researcher with the Institute for Marriage and Family in Ottawa. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We've talked a fair bit on Lighthouse News over the last little while about the whole end-of-life care issue, and you've written a policy summation of a new website. I don't know how new it is, but a website that's available called Virtual Hospice. You can find it online at virtualhospice.ca. It's kind of an online hospice program for people that don't have one available. Talk to me a little bit about how you found it, how this thing originated, and, you know, what's it all about?
Well, I've known about it for a while because I researched this issue, and I also came about it in this case because I was contacted by the CEO at a conference I was at. And so I thought, what if we at the IMSC can help get the word out about this? The website actually celebrated their 10th anniversary last year. They began in 2004. It started basically in 2001, where a group of leaders in the palliative care community got together realizing there was a lot of gaps in access to palliative care. And I want to be clear off the bat that the intention of the website isn't actually to provide palliative care as you would receive by a team of people in a hospice or palliative care ward. They exist to provide information and support and to address the gaps in information and support. And it was begun, Senator Sharon Carstairs, she's retired, but she was involved. And also Dr. Harvey Chochanov out of Winnipeg is still involved. And so it was a real desire on behalf of these experts in palliative care to see some of the gaps in information and support bridged and to explore how they could do that through a website.
You mentioned this isn't actually a hospice care facility. It's more advice. That kind of leads me to my next question. I mean, how realistic is it to try to do this in an online forum? The very nature of hospice care requires at least some hands-on involvement, right?
Well, the example that I give was given by the executive director in the publication that we put out. It gives an example of how it can work. They have a whole team of palliative care experts, of spiritual advisors, of people who have different ranges of expertise. A grandmother, for example, posts a question on their Ask an Expert section of their website. Her daughter is dying and she needs to communicate this somehow with her 3-year-old grandson. And so the team of experts, when they receive that question, gather together, think about how they're going to answer it, respond to the grandmother, and they respond in such a way that they not only help the grandmother communicate with her grandson, but they also help mother and son. They give them some ideas on how they can build a legacy, and they help the grandmother know how she can continue to help her grandson in the months, days, and years ahead. The Ask an Expert questions, they're providing information that people are very much in need of. And I guess the reality in terms of palliative care in Canada is not only that, best guess and a rough estimate, 16% of Canadians have access to it. But as Ms. Corey made clear, the executive director, people come up with these kind of questions in the spur of the moment when they need them answered. And if it's outside of office hours of your local palliative care doctor or you don't have access, then an online forum fills that gap in terms of getting you that information. And I know they have discussion forums also where, for example, a spouse who's lost their spouse, like a widow or a widower, can come on to that discussion forum and receive support from other people who are in their situation. There are limitations, obviously, for the fact that it's online. It's not human touch, even in that discussion forum. But I do strongly feel that the ability to have access to a team of experts that is probably unmatched anywhere on the web and have access to a whole community of people who have dealt with and wrestled with the death of a loved one or, sickness, terminal illness, whatever it might be, that does have a place in terms of offering support and information.
Websites certainly reflect the increasing role of technology in our society. I mean, you cite the 16% statistic in terms of folks who have access to a hospice or palliative care facility. It seems that a lot of this would go to folks in small rural communities, or am I wrong there?
I don't know that it's specifically focused on small and rural communities, because I know from previous research, yes, there is an urban-rural divide in terms of palliative care access. But also, your listeners from across the country will forgive me for referencing Toronto, but if you live in one area of Toronto, you'll have good access. If you live in another, you won't. So it's not just rural and urban. And I don't cite that as a major concern. And looking at the website myself, I think that even people with dial-up would be able to access it and use its services.
Final question, just from sort of a 10,000-foot policy view. I mean, technology is playing an ever-increasing role in the provision of medical and social services. Something as simple as an orthopedic surgeon being able to email an x-ray to a colleague for a second opinion. People can Google their symptoms online now. More and more people are turning to their computers or tablets or phones for information that they used to have to go to the experts for. Is this a good thing? Are there potential downsides? Are we in danger of losing that human touch? What do you think, just from the broad perspective?
The pressing need going forward in Canada in terms of expanding palliative care isn't an expansion of this site as much as it is getting every graduating nurse and doctor to receive a base amount of education in palliative care, so that whether they're working in the acute care ward, intensive care, emergency ward, in a palliative care ward, in a hospice ward, wherever they'd be working in the healthcare system, the frontline workers can provide that basic level of palliative care. And then where technology would come in that case, would be they'd not only provide that basic level of care, they'd know their limits, they'd know when they need to refer or when they need to consult. And technology would come in the sense that it would then allow them to consult an expert. If I was a nurse and I said, I've exhausted all the options for pain that I have, I've exhausted them, and it's still not under control. What do you recommend? Is there something you'd recommend for this type of pain? I could consult an expert. They would be able to give me that advice. They would be able to guide me through that process. That's where technology can be helpful. But technology can never replace human contact. I know myself, I would dry up if I didn't have human contact. Every human needs to belong, and every human needs to be part of some level of community. So I don't bring people's attention to this website in order to replace community, but to basically add to the information and resources that they might have available to them locally.
Eric, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager, Brian Grimm. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.